Chapter 13. Monster in the House. More than just a scary story. Warning. This chapter contains spoilers for the following books. Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. Prey by Michael Crichton. The Deep by Nick Cutter. Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill. There's nothing scarier than being trapped in an enclosed space with a monster who wants to kill you. And it might be your fault. This describes the setup of one of the most popular story genres of all time, the monster in the house. This is where you'll find most of your favorite horror, slasher, and haunting novels, as well as some thrillers. The scary story is as primal can be. Because even a cave person, especially a cave person, can understand the concept, kill the beast before the beast kills you. And the genre keeps expanding, with more successful novels being released each year. Because there's always a new and exciting way to take the classic nightmare scenario of being stuck with a monster in the house and give it a fresh twist. But as we study the three essential ingredients for this genre, we'll soon come to see that the key to cracking this frightening story archetype is not necessarily the scariness of the monster, although that helps, or the claustrophobic nature of the confined space, also helps, but the reason the monster is here. The beast's raison d'être, as the French would say, is what makes these tales truly scary, and more important, what makes them resonate with readers long after the final page is turned and the monster is destroyed. Or not. This story type is old. You could easily say it's a classic. It dates all the way back to the myth of the Minotaur and the maze, and authors have been successfully re-spinning the same template over and over again. From Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, to William Peter Blatty's The Exorcist, to Adam Neville's The Ritual. Stephen King and Dean Koontz have both made a killing in this genre. From The Shining, Salem's Lot, It, and Pet Sematary by King, to Watchers, Midnight, and Hideaway by Koontz, many a classic novel by these two falls into this category. And readers gobble them up. Why? Because the template works. It's a story blueprint that continues to haunt readers time and time again. The three essential ingredients of a successful monster in the house tale are 1. A monster. 2. A house. And 3. A sin. Let's take a look at the monster first. These come in all shapes and sizes. They can be as human as you and me, or at least seem to be on the outside. Or they can be as far out and as paranormal as our imaginations will allow. From serial killers to evil spirits to scientific experiments run amok, their common denominator is some sort of supernatural power. And I don't mean supernatural in the magical sense, although those monsters exist too. I mean it in the literal sense. These monsters function outside the realm of natural human behavior. For instance, a serial killer fueled by insanity has a supernatural power. They don't act like normal human beings. They are piloted by evil. Of course, there are also the monsters whose power really does come from something paranormal, magical, or science fictional, like the spirits in The Shining, the demon in The Exorcist, the murderous nanoswarms in Prey by Michael Crichton, the mysterious mind-altering ambrosia found at the bottom of the ocean in The Deep by Nick Cutter, or the man-made creature in Frankenstein. All monsters, by definition, are supernatural. They're driven by a motivation that goes against the laws of nature. Which is why, in so many of these types of novels, the characters and the reader often don't just fear for their lives, they fear for their souls. So much scarier. Death is nothing, but the idea that something worse than death could happen to us, that's where the real fear comes in, because it goes beyond our comprehension as mere mortals. That's also why zombie stories are so successful. These dudes aren't just dead, they're undead. And that's so much worse, because of the fear that we too could lose our soul and become just like them. Second, every great Monster in the House novel should have some kind of confined space in which the monster exists. We call this the house. And I'll give you a hint. The smaller the space, or the more isolated the heroes, the better the story. Houses can range from literal houses, like in The Exorcist or The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, to an entire town, like in Salem's Lot, an isolated desert, like in Prey, a creepy lab stationed at the bottom of the ocean in The Deep, or even an entire country. As long as the monster's wrath is specific or targeted in some way. For instance, the monster in Frankenstein is free to roam about the entire world, but he attacks only Victor Frankenstein's closest friends and family. His beef is with his creator, no one else. Therefore, the house in that novel is Victor's family unit. Whatever your choice may be, the key takeaway here is the idea of being trapped. If your heroes can just hop in the car and skedaddle right on out of there, where's the threat? What's the conflict? Where's the story? Being stuck somewhere or targeted for some reason is the whole point of the genre. Because what's scarier than a soul-destroying monster? A soul-destroying monster you can't escape from. But more important than a monster and a house is the third genre ingredient, a sin. The prey that the monster is stalking, often our hero or heroes, cannot be completely innocent. Someone is responsible for bringing the monster into being, invading the monster's territory, or waking the monster up. And it's usually the hero, a counterpart of the hero, or even all of humanity who has committed this sin. Either way, this catastrophe is somehow our fault. In Frankenstein, the sin is Dr. Frankenstein's human arrogance in his attempt to play God and create human life. So it's only fitting that the very human life he created would turn against him. In Prey, the sin is human greed, a popular sin among Monster in the House tales. The company featured in the novel, Zymos, is so desperate to have their new scientific project succeed that they start messing with the laws of biology, letting technology run amok. And guess what happens? That very technology, in this case a swarm of nanoparticles, comes back to kill them. Crichton plays with this sin a lot in his novels. The same template can be found in his phenomenal bestseller, Jurassic Park, in which human greed leads once again to technology run amok. It's a warning to the rest of us about letting science go too far. And it's why these types of novels are so successful. We can heed that warning. It applies to us. The sin is really what makes this genre work. It's what makes these stories resonate with readers. Because the sin almost always ties into the deeper theme. That universal lesson that we can all relate to. This sin is essentially a warning label to the rest of us. Beware, this could happen to you if you don't learn from these mistakes. It's one thing to get eaten. It's another to get eaten because of something we did. The guilt of the sin adds to the horror of the situation. The sin is also important to the story because it usually holds a clue to destroying the monster itself. Let's figure out what we did wrong, fast, before we too succumb to the beast. But more important, the sin raises a poignant underlying question. Who's the real monster here? It or us? It's a question certainly explored in the classic novel Frankenstein, as well as many other monster-in-the-house tales. The sin gives your story reason and meaning because it touches on the theme. Without it, what's the point? What are you trying to say? There has to be a reason the monster is attacking this person, group, or society. What did these victims do to deserve the attack? What sin of humanity are they being punished for? Even if it's not the hero themselves who is responsible, someone, somewhere along the way, decided to open Pandora's box and peek inside, and this story is the result. The sin is also usually how we can tell the difference between a monster in the house and a dude with a problem. Two genres that often get confused. The question to ask yourself is, whose fault is this? If the answer is, it's our fault, or it's the hero's fault, then you usually know you're looking at a monster in the house. Another popular, although not required, element that you'll often see in Monster in the House tales is a character called the Half-Man. This is usually a mentor-type character, a survivor who has gone to battle with the monster before. They have prior knowledge of its evil and have possibly even come away damaged or maimed on account of it. In the deep, our hero Luke finds the journals of Dr. Westlake, a scientist who has already perished at the hands of the mysterious ambrosia substance. In the journals, Dr. Westlake's ramblings grow more and more chaotic and insane, giving Luke a glimpse of what this terrifying substance can do. The Half-Man character can be an effective way to get mythology and background exposition into your story without it feeling like you're info dumping. This character is the literal embodiment of the threat the monster poses. You might notice that the Half-Man character, if he's still alive, will often die at the All Is Lost beat, where mentors often die. Because in the end, the hero, or heroes, must face the monster alone. Killing off your mentor ups the stakes, because once that help is gone, it's time to stop fooling around and come up with an Act 3 plan. Lest the monster come for you next. To recap, if you're thinking of writing a Monster in the House novel, make sure your story includes these three essential ingredients. A monster, supernatural in its powers, even if its strength derives from insanity, and evil at its core. A house. That is an enclosed space, which could be a literal house, a family unit, an entire town, or the world. A sin, meaning someone is guilty of bringing the monster into the house or invading the monster's territory. A transgression that can include ignorance and often relates to the theme the hero must learn. Popular Monster in the House novels through time include The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson, The Shining by Stephen King, The Silence of the Lambs by Thomas Harris, The Ritual by Adam Neville. For a complete list, please refer to the bonus PDF that came with this audiobook. Here is the beat sheet for Heart-Shaped Box by Joe Hill. Save the cat genre, monster in the house. Book genre, horror. Total pages, 374. William Morrow paperback, 2007. When aging rock star Judas Coyne buys a ghost from an online auction site, he gets much more than he bargained for after he discovers the ghost is irreversibly tied to him. This modern monster in the house has chilled readers the world over, becoming a New York Times bestseller and winning the coveted Bram Stoker Award for Best First Novel, a prestigious award in the horror genre, and earning Joe Hill who is also the author of Horns, which was adapted as a film starring Daniel Radcliffe, a permanent place in the Horror Hall of Fame. 1. Opening image, pages 1 through 8. When Jude Coyne's assistant, Danny, asks Jude if he wants to buy a ghost off the internet, we're immediately thrown into this chilling, supernatural world of Joe Hill's creation. We quickly learn that Jude Coyne is a 54-year-old, once-famous rock star living in upstate New York. He is still recognized everywhere, but hasn't toured or recorded an album in years. Jude likes to collect disturbing things, so this ghost for sale seems right up his alley. The ghost is allegedly tied to a dead man's funeral suit that someone is selling on an online auction site. Jude chooses the equivalent of the Buy Now button, and click, our Monster in the House tale begins. 2. Setup, pages 9 through 26. The suit is delivered in a, you guessed it, heart-shaped box. As we wait for the ghost to make its first appearance, Joe Hill tells us more about his hero, Jude Coyne, and his world, showing us how deeply flawed Jude is in all aspects of his life. On the family front, home, Jude hasn't spoken to his father in years, and we catch hints of an abusive past, shard of glass. His father is on his deathbed, and Jude essentially tells the nurse he doesn't care if his father lives or dies. On the job front, work, again, Jude doesn't record or tour anymore. He lost two of his bandmates, one to a car accident and one to AIDS, and he hasn't really gotten over it. And on the relationship front, play, it seems Jude collects not only disturbing occult items, but also goth girlfriends. He's had a string of them, but he never lets himself get too close, which is why he never calls them by their real name, but rather by the state they're from. His current live-in girlfriend is Georgia, aka Mary Beth, a former stripper, and before her there was Florida, Anna, whom Jude kicked out when her depression became too much for Jude to handle. Right away, we get the sense that Jude is insensitive, emotionally cut off, especially when it comes to women, and haunted by his past. Before the big catalyst comes and sets this adventure in motion, Joe Hill sets off mini catalysts, letting us know that major change is coming soon. First, when the suit arrives, Georgia is pricked by what she thinks is a pin in it, but when Jude inspects the suit, he finds no pins. Next, Jude hears the radio playing in Danny's office, even though he knows the radio wasn't on in there before. When he goes to investigate, there's a strange voice on the radio saying creepy things like, "The dead pull the living down," page 19. 3. Theme stated, page 26. The puncture wound on George's finger is looking bad. Another mini catalyst. But when Jude flippantly tells her to put something on that, because there's less work for pole dancers with visible disfigurements, page 26, Georgia lashes out at him. She says sarcastically, "You're a sympathetic son of a bitch, you know that?" To which Jude replies, "You want sympathy? Go fuck James Taylor." Jude's blatant insensitivity to Georgia and his deeper-rooted inability to love will be revealed to be not only the reason the monster is in the house, but also the crucial flaw Jude must overcome by the end of the novel. 4. Catalyst, pages 27 through 30. A noise wakes Jude. He thinks one of his two dogs, Angus and Bon, is in the house. But when he looks out the window, he sees them both in their pen. He ventures out into the hall, where he spots an old man sitting in an antique shaker chair, wearing the suit that came in the heart-shaped box. 5. Debate, pages 31 through 69. Like many stories that feature a brush with the supernatural, The question of this debate is, was it real? Is there really a ghost in Jude's house? Did he really buy a spirit off the internet? And if it is real, how does this supernatural magic work? To get answers, Jude tells Danny to track down the woman who sold him the ghost. Danny gets Jessica Price on the phone. She soon reveals that she's the sister of Jude's last girlfriend, Florida, aka Anna. Jessica explains that their stepfather, the ghost, blames Jude for Anna's death. She slit her wrists in the bathtub, apparently after Jude kicked her out of his house. And her stepfather is now haunting Jude, seeking revenge. It turns out Jessica purposefully targeted Jude online to make sure he was the one who bought the suit. Jude vows to send the suit back to Jessica, assuming that the ghost is attached to it. But Jessica claims that it won't make her stepfather go away. She hints at the house, enclosed location, of this monster in the house when she says, "Wherever you go, he'll be right there." Page 36. It seems the ghost is attached not to the suit, but rather to Jude, and it won't stop until Jude is dead. Jude then goes into research mode, trying to get to the bottom of this ghost business and the claim that Anna killed herself because of him. He tells Danny to dig up all the old letters Anna sent him after he kicked her out, and he starts reading old books about the occult. Georgia tells him to get rid of the suit because it smells bad, but Jude isn't convinced that will do anything. Meanwhile, Georgia's wound is getting badly infected, and Jude keeps catching more glimpses of the ghost. He notices the ghost has black scribbles on his face where his eye should be and holds a gold chain with a razor blade dangling from it, like a pendulum. The ghost is becoming an increasing problem, and Jude is going to have to do something about it. 6. Break into 2. Pages 70 through 72. Jude finally decides to investigate the ghost. He does a web search for Anna's stepfather, uncovering an obituary for Craddock McDermott. The picture is of a younger version of the man he saw in the hallway. Jude discovers that Craddock was a skilled hypnotist. Then a new email appears in his inbox. It's from Craddock. It's long and rambling, claiming that Jude will die. Jude smashes the computer. 7. Fun and Games. Pages 72 to 165. Joe Hill promises a ghostly adventure with this premise, and he delivers. The upside-down world for Jude, and the creepy fun for us, the readers, is Jude's life with Craddock's ghost. As the day goes on, the threat of this ghost in Jude's life grows more and more dangerous. Georgia finds Jude in the closed barn with his car's motor running. She thinks he was trying to kill himself, but he swears he never started the engine. It must have been Craddock. After restless, disturbing dreams, Jude decides to sell the suit, only to find that Georgia burned it. Yet the ghost is still there. The downward path continues when it's discovered that Craddock, as a hypnotist, seems to be able to persuade people to do things by listening to the sound of his voice. He persuades Jude's assistant, Danny, to hang himself, and nearly convinces Georgia to shoot herself. Then he tries to hypnotize Jude to kill Georgia himself. Jude is able to stop himself just in time by cutting his palm and focusing on the pain. Meanwhile, we get more information about Jude's relationship with his father. He was very abusive to Jude and his mother. One time he slammed Jude's cord-making hand in the door, hindering his ability to play the guitar. As Craddock pursues him, Jude makes an important discovery about his dogs. Because they are familiars to him, they can help protect him against the ghost. The dogs' shadows are able to hold Craddock back. Soon after that, Jude decides it's time for him, Georgia, and the dogs to leave. He wants to drive south to Florida to visit Jessica Price, the woman who sold him the suit and ghost. 8. B Story. Page 78. The B Story character of this novel is Anna McDermott, the ex-girlfriend whom Jude cast aside 9 months ago, and the stepdaughter of the ghost. Not only does she represent the theme, Jude's insensitivity and inability to love, because her gruesome fate was a direct result of his flaws, but she will eventually help Jude and Georgia chase the ghost of her stepfather away. Although Anna is mentioned prior to this, page 78 is when we start to learn more about Anna through Jude's memories. He tells us about their relationship and how good it was at one point. Anna will continue to make more frequent appearances throughout the novel, first in memories, dreams, and flashbacks, and then as a ghost, as her role in Jude's transformation builds. We soon start to realize that Jude did love Anna. His flaws just kept him from showing it or acting on it, thus landing him in his current position. 9. Midpoint, pages 166 to 178. The morning after Jude and Georgia leave for their road trip, they stop at a Denny's for breakfast. It's their first public outing since the ghost came into their lives, and it doesn't go well. In this false defeat midpoint, after a waitress spills hot coffee on Georgia's still infected finger, Georgia runs to the bathroom to tend to it. When Jude sees Craddock's truck idling outside, he runs into the women's bathroom and is just in time to stop Georgia from killing herself. She smashes the mirror and tries to use one of the shards of glass to slit her throat. They escape the Denny's, only to be chased by Craddock's pickup truck through a tunnel under an overpass. The truck barrels toward them, just missing and hitting a wall. When Jude looks at the truck again, he sees it's a Jeep with a dazed, hypnotized man behind the wheel. The stakes are raised as Jude realizes that Craddock is powerful enough to manipulate strangers to try to kill them. Midpoint twist. 10. Bad guys close in, pages 179 to 265. As they get back on the road, Georgia starts to ask Jude a ton of questions, something Anna used to do. A and B's stories cross when Jude gets fed up and accidentally calls Georgia Anna, which makes her cry. Afterward, Jude recalls the night he broke up with Anna and sent her home. That same night, he'd gone to a strip club and met Georgia. After the false defeat midpoint, the bad guys close in is an upward path as Jude and Georgia get closer to the truth about Anna's death and an answer about how to defeat Craddock. They make a stop at the house of Georgia's grandma, Bammy. There, Georgia gets out her old Ouija board and the two attempt to contact the ghost of Anna. Through the Ouija board, Anna reveals that she didn't kill herself. Craddock killed her. They ask if Anna can help them. She replies yes and asks Georgia if she will be the golden door, page 219. Georgia and Jude don't yet know what this is, and neither do we, but Georgia replies yes. Later, Jude gets a message from his father's nurse. Jude's father, whom he hasn't spoken to in years, has been unconscious for the past 36 hours, and he's not going to last much longer. Internal bad guys. After leaving Bammy's house, Jude pulls over at a used car dealership and beats up a man named Ruger. He remembered Georgia telling him once that Ruger had molested her when she was 13. This is one of the many signs that Jude is changing. He's standing up for Georgia, protecting her instead of mistreating her. He's becoming more sympathetic, which is evident in the growing closeness with her he's been feeling ever since the break into two. After this incident, Jude starts calling Georgia by her real name, Mary Beth. The two arrive at Jessica Price's in Florida and break into the house. A fight breaks out, during which the truth about what happened to Anna is fully revealed. Craddock had been molesting both sisters since they were children. He'd been able to hypnotize them to make them forget. After Jude sent Anna home, Anna threatened to turn Craddock in. He killed her, with Jessica's help, and made it look like a suicide. Craddock blamed Jude for changing Anna. After she'd been with Jude, Craddock could no longer hypnotize her. And that's why Craddock is haunting Jude. Jude realizes that the signs of Anna's sexual abuse had been right in front of him, but he never saw them. Theme. It's also revealed that Jessica, who worships Craddock, was letting him molest her own daughter. Jude is about to strangle Jessica by pressing a tire iron against her throat when suddenly Jessica's daughter Reese appears with a gun. 11. All is lost. Pages 266 to 278. A struggle ensues, and in a whiff of death moment, one of Jude's dogs, his protection against Craddock, is shot and killed. Craddock persuades Reese to aim the gun at Jude. She does and blows off Jude's finger. As Jude and Mary Beth, Georgia, try to get away, Jude's other dog is hit by Jessica's car. Craddock was manipulating her, too. The dog is in bad shape, and Jude's finger is bleeding profusely as the two finally manage to get away. Mary Beth wants to take Jude to the hospital, but he refuses. Instead, he tells her they're going to Louisiana, Jude's childhood home. 12. Dark Night of the Soul, pages 279 to 309. At the very end of The All Is Lost, Mary Beth asks Jude, "How do you see all this ending?" Page 278. Jude doesn't have an answer. That's what this Dark Night of the Soul is all about. It's a preparation for the end. As they head back to Jude's childhood home, Jude knows he will have to confront more than his current ghost. He'll have to confront his past ghost as well, namely, his father. As Mary Beth drives, Jude has more dreams, visions about Anna. He sees the night of her death play out, Dark Night Epiphany. Anna threatened to turn Jessica in after finding out that Jessica was letting her own daughter be molested by Craddock. Then Jessica helped Craddock kill Anna by drugging her. In Jude's dream, right before Craddock slits Anna's wrists with a razor, Jude tells Anna that he loves her, and she says she loves him. Jude's transformation is nearly complete. By the time they reach Jude's childhood home, the other dog is dead in the back seat, which means Jude has nothing left to protect him against Craddock. Arlene, the nurse, leads Jude to his childhood bedroom, where his unconscious father sleeps, and gives him morphine for the pain in his finger. 13. Break into Three. Pages 310 to 314. Arlene is scared off by the ghost, leaving Jude alone in the house with Georgia, Craddock, the real ghost, and his father, the metaphorical ghost of his past. Jude watches as Craddock climbs out of the heart-shaped box on the floor, and Jude greets him. "What kept you?" Page 314. Jude is finally ready to face his ghosts. 14. Finale. Pages 315 to 354. Craddock tries to manipulate Jude to strangle Mary Beth, but Jude finds he's able to resist by humming a song he'd written earlier. Craddock is able to take over Jude's father's body, and Jude's two ghosts are now one. A ghastly fight between Jude and Jude's father slash Craddock follows, in which Craddock tries to cut Jude with his razor blade. Mary Beth enters in the nick of time and stabs Jude's father in the neck and back. But then Mary Beth slips in his blood and falls, and Craddock is able to cut her throat with his razor. As she bleeds out, she tells Jude that Anna is calling to her and asks him to make the golden door, referenced earlier. As Craddock pulls himself out of Jude's father's body and rises again, Jude uses Mary Beth's blood to paint a door on the floor. Mary Beth manages to roll over the door just as it falls open. She floats over it in a bright light and soon transforms into Anna. Anna grabs Craddock and pulls him through the door with her. He is gone for good. Jude crawls to the door, looking for Mary Beth, and falls through it. Jude finds himself in his restored Mustang with Anna, who quickly transforms into Mary Beth. Mary Beth explains to Jude that they are on the night road, where the dead travel. It's nice and bright, and Mary Beth speculates that maybe it's only night here for some people. page 334. When Mary Beth tells Jude she has to go and it's time for him to get out of the car, he won't let go of her hand. He doesn't want to leave. He says, "We, where we get out. We. Page 336. Jude's transformation is now complete. He's no longer selfish and emotionally disconnected. He's now capable of love, and he's proving it. He's grabbing hold of that shard of glass that was planted by his father way back when he was a child, and removing it for good. When Jude wakes up in the hospital, he discovers that Mary Beth was dead for a few minutes, but came back to life. He saved her. 15. Final images, pages 355 to 374. Joe Hill ends his story with several quick after snapshots to sum up how life has changed for his hero, Jude Coyne. In a series of short, paragraph-long chapters, we see Jude and Mary Beth attending Danny's memorial, Jude finally recording a new album, Jude restoring another old car, and Jude and Mary Beth getting married. Then we learn that the police found photo evidence that Craddock was molesting Jessica Price's daughter, Reese, and that Jessica, who allowed it to happen, was arrested for child endangerment. In the final chapter, 5 years later, Reese comes to visit Jude and Mary Beth, apologizing for shooting him. When Jude looks at Reese, he sees Anna in her. He helps Reese, giving her money and buying her a bus ticket, redeeming himself as best he can for what he did to Anna. Why is this a monster in the house? Heart-shaped box contains all three elements of a successful monster in the house story. A monster. Craddock McDermott, the evil hypnotist ghost who can persuade people to kill themselves and others, is Joe Hill's creepy invention and a worthy advocate for arrogant rock star Jude Coyne. A house. Although the monster can technically go wherever he wants, he is tied to Jude because Jude purchased his suit on the internet, and because Craddock, who practiced dark occult arts in life, linked his spirit to Jude before he died, thus making Jude the house in which the monster is enclosed. A sin. Jude is responsible for bringing this monster into existence. His flaws of insensitivity, arrogance, and inability to love are the sins that created Craddock's ghost. When he kicked Anna, aka Florida, out of his house and sent her home, it directly led to Anna's death and Craddock's plan to haunt Jude from beyond the grave. And only in dealing with this sin is Jude able to rid himself of the monster. If you'd like to read an abbreviated version of this beat sheet, check out the Cat's Eye View for Heart-Shaped Box, which can be found in the bonus PDF.